The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 FM KUAF in Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 18th, 2018. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a discussion about the importance of learning CPR. Also, Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette tells us about a new theater company. Those stories and more, but we begin this edition of the program with a story from the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks in Fayetteville, where officials say the pathology reports of more than 19,000 veteran patients from across the country will have to be externally reviewed after it was discovered that a Fayetteville VA pathologist who had repeatedly undergone substance abuse treatment was found to be impaired. So far, 7 case errors have been found. 5 patients have been notified. 1 veteran linked to the pathologist has died. The news was announced this morning at a press conference at the VA, where Interim Medical Center Director Kelvin Parks says every measure will be taken to deal with the situation.
We're treating this like a national disaster.
Arkansas's congressional delegation was briefed last Thursday about the incident. Representatives Steve Womack and Bruce Westerman, along with Senator John Bozeman, were on hand at the press conference, where Westerman framed the incident.
This is a colossal failure of the system. Not necessarily because the system in itself is flawed. There were quality control and stopgap protocol in place to prevent this level of failure, but even with proper procedures in place, systems fail and can lead to the most undesirable results.
The VA will host a town hall meeting in 2 weeks to address concerns. The VA also has set up a call center for patients who may have questions. The number is 479-388-5428. We'll have a full report on this incident tomorrow on Ozarks at Large. Right now, there is nowhere in the country where someone working a full-time minimum wage job could afford to rent a modest 2-bedroom apartment. That's according to an annual report from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition released last week. Nowhere includes Arkansas, which has some of the cheapest housing in the country. As that report was released, a group of volunteers from World Mission Builders was in Eureka Springs in their second week of building affordable rental homes for the city's low-income residents. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek stopped by to see how the community is taking shape.
We are under the gun to try to get the decking all done and some of the paper on, and Rich is going to build a dormer on the beekeeper cottage down there. And we will be in good shape.
In good shape to put down some shingles, that is. When we meet with World Mission Builders volunteers, they're taking a lunch break at the Eureka Christian Health Outreach Building, while project coordinator Joe Wilson gives that update. The volunteers head back up the road just moments later to keep working on what will eventually be Echo Village.
And we just sent out an email, said we're going to go to Eureka Springs, for example, and build 8 little houses. And, the local project provides housing and meals, and we show up with our campers and our RVs and our cars and our tools.
That's Wilson again. He's from Enid, Oklahoma. And the more than 60 volunteers who came to Eureka Springs are from more than a dozen different states. Most of them are also retirees who wanted to give back now that they have more free time. In the last 2 weeks, they've managed to frame, wall, and roof 8 little homes along Passion Play Road. Kimberly Clark says this project has been a long time coming.
And here we are, the dream, 40 years later. And we're gonna put a hole in poverty in Northwest Arkansas.
Clark, who's lived in Eureka Springs for several decades, has been instrumental in getting Echo Village off the ground.
When I got here in 1977, there were all these little houses that this is perfect for affordable housing. You know, people can get in. I mean, some of them were like $23,000. Now they're $149 bed and breakfast. We did that to ourselves.
Clark says many of Eureka's residents work in the service industry that supports the tourist town. And 24% of those residents live below the poverty line.
And there's also no wintertime work. So if you work 7 days a week, and what do your kids do in the summer while you're off working 7 days a week? then you don't have anything to do.
That's what got Clark, Dan and Susie Bell of Echo, and Eureka Springs Mayor Butch Berry talking about creating a place like Echo Village. The Bells are already known for their health clinic, where they use volunteers and donor support to provide free health care to hundreds of low-income people without health insurance. Now they want to build Echo Village using the same model. And Dan Bell says they're on their way thanks to World Mission Builders.
It's awesome because now it's tangible. And I think the community sees it's tangible. And it's not just somebody talking about doing something. It's something someone's doing.
Bell says the most challenging part for him was getting all the materials ordered and sorted before the volunteers arrived. Especially since they're building five different styles of homes. So the village has the same charm Eureka Springs is known for.
And so we've caught a lot of heat from these volunteers like, why'd you make that roof so steep? And why'd you put that dormer there? This is not how to build inexpensive housing. It's not done simply. It's been done in a complicated way. But the end result will be just what I think we want.
Some of the volunteers were intrigued by the challenge of the actual build, like Gil Wright, who came from Marshall, Illinois.
I'll be honest with you, that was part of the draw in coming here. I was told that we were going to build 8 houses in 14 days, and I said, I want to see that.
Wright, who was a mechanical engineer before he retired, says this is his first trip with the organization.
There's a big difference between design and the techniques of how you put something together. I'm a good design engineer, but I hadn't done so much of this, and I've learned a tremendous amount from the folks here.
And other volunteers have learned along the way, too. Ruth Williams from Fort Isabel, Texas, has been on 15 building missions with her husband.
The ladies oftentimes get taxed with putting caulk around the buildings, which makes it watertight. And then when we get the watertight on, we put the wrap around the outside that makes it air and watertight.
Williams says they also hand the tools and keep the worksite organized.
We got a few brave ones that like to go to the roof. I'm not one of them. It's not the heights. I don't mind heights. I'll get on a lift and go as high as you want me to, but don't give me a slant.
Project manager Joe Wilson says Echo Village is one of World Mission Builders' bigger undertakings compared to the projects they usually do.
You know, we're talking about church buildings, parsonages, church camps, libraries, church boys and girls dorms.
Wilson says a lot of the volunteers have their specialties. They are former electricians, plumbers, and HVAC technicians. So they were able to break up into teams to work on each of the homes.
We talk sometimes about the management style called critical path. And so there's one path that's critical. We got to do things in sequence and in order so that we come out at the end and have a finished product.
But Wilson says every volunteer is valuable, regardless of their skills.
For example, we had an elderly lady a few years ago, and she had a little magnet. And all she did is walk around the job site and pick up the bent nails. And time the project was over, she had 5 gallons of bent nails. But that was valuable. Kept the site clean, kept it organized, and kept it safe.
And Echo Village will need more volunteers of all skill levels to become a place where people can live. The Bells say all of the homes are shingled and dried in. One house has doors and windows, and a porch is done on another. But Dan Bell says there's a lot more left to do, from siding to flooring to insulating to painting.
And so there'll be all these 8 houses that are started and not completed. And so my dream is that I can find some retired contractor who will fall in love with this and help us finish it.
If you're interested in volunteering in any capacity, or if you want to sponsor one of the homes, the Bells ask that you contact Eureka Christian Health Outreach. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
And you'll be able to find that contact information at ozarksatlarge.com. Anyone living at Echo Village will have to go through an application process. The homes will be open to single parents, veterans, seniors, and the differently abled. The Bells also hope to triple the number of homes in the community in the future. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Now in its third year, the Homegrown Music Festival is making some changes. After 2 years on the Mulberry River, the Music and Arts Festival is relocating, adding sporting events, and changing its name. The Homegrown Music and Mountain Sports Festival will take place at Fayetteville's Kessler Mountain Regional Park this weekend. Also new this year, admission will be free, thanks in part to a $15,000 grant from the Fayetteville Advertising and Promotion Commission. Despite the changes, Jeremy Gunn, who co-founded the event with Jessica Sumner, says the festival will remain family-friendly and continue its focus on sustainability. Last month, Jeremy Gunn came to Studio 123 to share more of the details of the festival.
First 2 years, we were at the Mulberry Rivers at Birds Adventure Center, which we love that spot. And we love that area, and we love the owners of Birds. They're amazing people. It was just getting harder and harder for us to get. When we first started this, we wanted it to be a environmentally low-impact type event, a large-scale event that we could do environmentally friendly. We also wanted it to be a family-friendly event. And it's hard if you have kids. I have four children. I have three little girls, and it's hard for me to take them and go camping for 3 days. So we were running into that problem with a lot of people. We're trying to come for the day, and they're having to drive an hour and a half, 2 hours back, and it was just becoming an issue. So we thought, why don't we move it to town? And we've always looked at doing, like, an urban festival with kind of sports and, you know, different stuff mixed in. So after we left Birds last year, we always decompressed for about 2 months. And, you know, we're kind of out doing our thing in Fayetteville. And I called Jessica one day and I was like, man, if we're going to move it to town and do something, Mount Kessler would be a perfect spot because of the infrastructure that's there. The trail system's amazing. I mean, you have short routes, you have long routes, you can combine them all and do. And so I said we could add, you know, mountain biking, which is becoming like the thing to do in Northwest Arkansas. I mean, it's like we're like the Aspen of mountain bikers up here. And we thought there's trail runs you could do. The Disc Golf Association Chain Gang is another person that's working with us this year. So we thought about bringing the festival to town, doing it something where people could come and go. Won't be any overnight, but we can do it. You know, everybody can come for the day. The park closes at 11. We shut everything down. And that way you can bring your kids out for the day. You can take them home, give them a bath, put them in their own bed, and then next day wake up and do it all over again.
So new location, new events, new name.
New name, yeah. We are Homegrown Music and Mountain Sports Festival.
Okay, so let's start with the music because that's what's always been there. So
yes.
It's the 22nd through the 24th of June,
mm-hmm.
And yep. There will be plenty of music.
Plenty of music. Yeah, Friday we start at 4 o'clock. Friday and Saturday we'll start at 4. They want lights. I say lights out. Lights are on at 11. So I turn the field lights on at 11. Everybody goes home. So,
okay.
And then on Sunday we're doing what we call more of a Sunday school thing. It starts at 2 and ends around 7:30 or 8. And we're going to do a lot of interactive stuff for kids that day. A lot of it's going to be more of like a picnic kind of thing where you can bring your blanket, bring the family, and listen to music during the day. But yeah, Friday night we're going to have a headliner, which is Arkansas, a band that we all love, local favorite. We also have John Stickley, who played last year at the festival. John Stickley Trio, they're really amazing people. I love him and all the people who work for his whole group. Handmade Moments is another local band that people really love, Joel and Anna. They're going to play on Saturday. We have an awards ceremony Saturday before the headliner. Our headliner is Jeff Austin Band, so check them out. They've played around here. It's been probably 6 or 8 months ago. They played at George's. They're really good. And then I'm really excited about George Porter on Sunday. He's an amazing artist. He's been doing a lot of touring down in the Louisiana area, but he's a real funky, soulful kind of guy. So I think it'll be good. And our lineup's all available on our website, so homegrownarkansas.com. So you can check out all that. And there's links on there for the bands. You can see some of their music, some of the videos, and that kind of thing. But you know, like back to what you were saying, this is kind of where it all started, was our love for music and festivals and all that. So anytime we do an event, no matter if we do sports or we don't do sports or whatever we do, music will always kind of be the backbone of what we do, because that's kind of what brings people together, we feel. So.
And you mentioned an award ceremony before the headliner on Saturday. So award ceremony for what?
The award ceremony for, we have four different sporting events we're doing this year. There's going to be a disc golf tournament. So that's going to be, they're doing singles, they're doing co-ed, and that's going to start Friday, and we're going to do Saturday. And then Saturday morning, we're doing a 10K trail run, the Kick in Kessler, so it's going to be a lot of fun. And then Saturday night, we're going to do, which is going to be our cornerstone sports project. It's going to be the Beast of Burden Trail mountain bike race.
Oh.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a four-hour event, and so you can do teams, you can do solo, however many loops you can do. That's kind of how we determine the winner, so it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're working with ORC on that. They're the ones that have cut a lot of those trails out there. Brandon
right.
Pack, yeah, he's a really good guy, and he's the one that when we started doing this, he wanted to kind of team with us. He kind of saw what our vision was. We explained what we're wanting to do, and he's worked with us a lot to try to get in there, and he knows those trails better than anybody, and he has a good influence in Northwest Arkansas to get people to come out and participate. So he's been a real big help for us in that, in our sporting events. And we're also in a Renaissance race, which is going to be on Sunday.
What's a Renaissance race?
Renaissance race is like a bunch of different activities you can do. I mean, you remember the old, like, sack races and knot tying competitions, that kind of thing.
Okay.
It's kind of a throwback to old. And there's going to be 6 different events. We're not going to tell you what they are now, so we're coming in practicing ahead of time.
Okay. Is it kind of like an adventure race?
Sort of, yeah. It's sort of like an adventure race. There's a lot of different things that people are going to do. So we want it to kind of be something you got to think on your feet.
Okay.
It's going to be a lot of fun, though.
But outdoorsy things like tying knots. A fire or something.
Things,
maybe not starting a fire,
yeah,
but like outdoor things yeah. that
the
I think
burn
of.
Might keep us from starting a fire.
Yes,
there,
so it's like probably not starting a fire, but yes. like Boy Scout things that I think of.
Boy Scout things, yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. What other events do you guys have? I know there's lots of things for kids usually.
Oh, there's tons of stuff for kids. So we have Camp Creativity this year, and that's going to be run by the Little Village. Lisa Jo Outlaw is a local artist, and she has a group of kids that she works with called the Little Village. So they're going to help us set up Camp Creativity. It's going to be right there by the main stage, and we have tons of things lined up for that. The first thing we're doing Friday morning at 4:30 is Lemonade with Lionel.
The mayor?
The mayor, yeah.
Fayetteville
mayor?
Gonna
be there. Yeah,
okay.
He's going to be there. We're doing Be Your Own Super Hero, which my kids are really, really pumped about that. My kids are big into Avengers and DC Comics,
uh-huh.
and so we're going to make our own capes and our own masks.
Oh,
and so
fun.
You may see
so
lots
come
of little
up.
Adventures coming around
okay.
the festival. We're having, and every night we're going to have a kids dance floor.
Okay.
So at 8:30, that way we'll have a kids dance floor set up, so while you're enjoying the music, your kids can dance on the kids dance floor. It's going to be lit up, so you can kind of watch your kids in, watch the music, and
keep an eye on them while having
keep them
fun.
Wore out,
or...
yeah. we're going to have a magician there to help the kids do magic,
oh.
teach them a little sleight of hand, puppets in the park, pinch pots with Terra Studios. We love Terra Studios. I take my kids there all the time. But they've actually partnered with us this year to do some pinch pots, so it should be really neat.
What other events are that kind of the highlights?
Those are the highlights.
Okay.
I mean, anything we do, we want to try to get... You're going to get families involved, and we want to try to bring bring kids into doing things that where they can start to see the see what being environmentally conscious is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so what we do is we have a thing called Sustainability Row, and that's usually between 8 and 10 different organizations. Some are businesses, some are nonprofits, but we make them to come on Sustainability Row and tell their story to the public. We require them to be interactive with the community or have some type of interactive project or something. In the past, we've done seed bombs and just different things that they can do. This year, I think Buffalo Watershed is going to do prayer flags, Buddhist prayer flags, and they're going to have the kids that can, you know, each one of the little flags can be something that they can draw on there, create something so they can bring it home with them. Different things like that all of our different our nonprofits, and we have a bunch of them. We work with the U of A Cooperative Extension. Keep Arkansas Beautiful's coming this year. We have the Mulberry River Society, who's been with us the last 2 years. They're our main core group of volunteers that help us recycle and help us clean and sort and things like that. Like I said, Buffalo Watershed Alliance, Northwest Arkansas Land Trust, they're the ones who actually are kind of the stewards of the mountain up there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all going to have tents set up. They're going to tell you a little bit about what they do, but they're also going to do something interactive
okay.
during the weekend. And so you just go by their tents. It's going to be pretty obvious. We have a big giant sign that says Sustainability Row. So when you come by, hit up each one of them, learn a little bit about what they do, bring your kids because they're going to have giveaways for kids and stuff like that. So, and those are activities that I think really help bring kids in. Those things that kids will remember, they bring things home with them. And I think we want to get to the point where the kids are teaching the adults about, hey, we should do this. We should recycle this. Hey, we should quit buying plastic water bottles, because as a festival, we're very passionate about no single-use plastics at our festival. We try to eliminate landfill products as much as we can at our festivals. And we've done a really good job. Last year at Homegrown, I'm the one who's in charge of climbing the ladder on the dumpsters.
Okay.
And peering over and seeing what's in there. And last year we had about 4 bags of trash and a pair of flip-flops for a 3-day festival, which was like, wow. I even thought about digging the flip-flops out because they're in good shape, but I left them in there. But yeah, 4 bags of trash and a bag of flip or a set of flip-flops isn't too bad for a
weekend. That's not too bad. And you had how many thousands of people?
Oh, yeah, we had over 1,000 people there last year.
Over 1,000?
Yeah. So, and to do it, and that's kind of been our goal from the very beginning is to do – a large-scale event in a sustainable way where, you know, nothing's ever fully sustainable, but at least we try to incorporate some measures in there to help with that.
I know in the past you've asked people to, like, bring their own reusable glasses, but not glass, but cups, I guess is
exactly
the word I want, cups or things like that. Are you still encouraging that as well?
Oh, yes, most definitely. We're going to have hydration stations set up with filtered water. There's going to be at least four or five of those in the main stage area. So bring your water bottles. Bring, if you're doing the sporting events too, you know, we encourage anyone who's running the race, bring your water bottle, you know what I mean? The mountain bike race, of course, you're going to have your water bottle for that. Just bring those things with you because we'll have places out there for fill up. And then another thing that we're doing this year, in the past what we've always done is we've had like a dishwashing station set up where we have, you know, volunteers who wash dishes and then they bring them back to the food vendors and then we kind of create that so it keeps all the paper and plastic plates out of the trash. This year we actually found a new way of doing that. We're not able to set up a dishwashing station for numerous reasons out at Mount Kessler. So what we're doing this year, we're working with a company called Leafware. And what they do is they create a leaf plate and a little fork spoon thing that you can use while you're there. And that's what all of our vendors are going to have. And these are compostable. So when we're done with them, we have a special trash bin we're putting them in. And the city is actually going to take them and put them in their compost heap.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they'll actually turn into dirt. And they're sourced very ethically. They're all from fallen leaves. They're sterilized. They're compressed down. And then they're cut into shapes of plates and bowls and forks and spoons. So it's a really neat our hard part for us is going to keep all that stuff sorted. But we do have sorting stations, for lack of a better term. We have four bay trash units that we're going to have people manning them just to make sure no one gets confused and everything goes in the right spot. So if they say, hey, put this over here, they're not getting on to you. They're just trying to keep our work sorted for later.
Okay. I guess the final thing we should talk about is the admission price.
Yes. It's free this year.
and how did we get so lucky that it's free this year?
Well, we've always wanted to do something to give back to this area because this is the area where we've spent most of our time. We love the local bands around here. And me and Jess were just talking. We're like, hey, you know, if we can fund this thing through the, you know, the sports programs that we're doing and, you know, get a few vendor fees and, you know, get maybe a sponsor in there, then we can make it free for the public to where it's expensive. I mean, if you want to take your kids, if you have three kids like I or four kids like I do, and you want to bring, you know, you're a family of five and you want to go to a festival somewhere, and the tickets are $150. I mean, you're spending $1,000 by the time you park, and by the time you we want to be able to do something where families can come out, and they can bring their kids, and not have to worry about a financial strain. And you know, if it's free, we're going to have more people, which means, you know, they're going to buy more stuff from our vendors, which helps our vendors out, and it kind of shines a little bit bigger light on what we do. To where if we were charging $100 a ticket, we may only have a couple hundred people there, but with it being free, we can really get more people engaged and involved with how we do music festivals. We're not musicians, but just how we spotlight them and how we do things we do.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much and best of luck with the event.
Thank you very much.
That was Jeremy Gunn, co-founder of the Homegrown Music and Mountain Sports Festival at the Carver Center for Public Radio. The festival will take place Friday through Sunday at Kessler Mountain Regional Park in Fayetteville. More details are available at homegrownarkansas.com.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Arts Series presents Artisphere Festival Orchestra, Tuesday, June 19th at 7 p.m. Now in its eighth year, the 2018 Artisphere Festival Orchestra will feature musicians from major symphonies, ensembles, and distinguished music programs from around the world. Tickets and information at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600. 91.3 is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, presenting The Beyond, Georgia O'Keeffe and Contemporary Art, with more than 30 of O'Keeffe's iconic artworks, plus the work of 20 emerging artists. Developed by Crystal Bridges, the exhibition features flowers, luscious colors, city and desert scenes, feminine forms, and still lifes influenced by O'Keeffe's rich legacy. On view through September 3rd. crystalbridges.org for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. There are bucket lists, things you know you want to accomplish. Maybe you want to run a marathon or visit every continent. Then there is the list of things you know you need to accomplish, like learning CPR. June is a month set aside to emphasize the importance of CPR. Last week, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to two people working to make sure more of us know CPR. Serena Munz is the executive director of the American Heart Association in Northwest Arkansas, and Anna Mizell is a CPR instructor. Anna is also a teacher at Bentonville High School and a mother who has saved her daughter's life using CPR.
When my daughter was born in 2002, she contracted RSV, which is a respiratory virus that is very, very dangerous for newborn infants. And so we had been hospitalized at that time for, probably 3 weeks. And after she was released from the hospital, we were told that because her oxygen level had been so low for so long, that she would more than likely experience chronic asthma, chronic pneumonia, chronic bronchitis, and possibly have some learning deficits. So she did have pneumonia 2 or 3 times during her first year of life, and we were in and out of the hospital and on breathing treatments and things like that. So at 18 months old, she came down with pneumonia again, and we were put in the hospital thinking it was just what had happened to us before. She didn't seem to get well as fast. The pneumonia hung on, and having an 18-month-old in the hospital was kind of tough. So I guess probably because we were so seasoned with the illness, they went ahead and let us go home, and we would check in with the emergency room or the physician on a daily basis. So one morning in June, I was holding her in my lap, and I was feeding her a little pinches of pizza, and she started coughing, which was normal. She had pneumonia, so she was coughing a lot anyway. And then pretty much immediately, she went unresponsive. Her lips turned blue very quickly. And my first thought was that she choked on the pizza I was feeding her. So I called the doctor's office, which is the wrong thing to do.
911, right?
Yeah, I should have called 911, but and if it had been anybody but my own child, I would have known that. But with your own child, you sort of have trouble, and maybe you recognize you have an emergency, but you have trouble accepting it. And so I was trying to think of anything else it could be other than what I knew I was probably experiencing. So I called the doctor's office, and they immediately told me to hang up and call 911, and I did. And the 911 operator asked me if I knew CPR, and I said I did. And he told me I needed to start doing that. I argued with him a little bit because in my mind I just couldn't figure out why she'd fallen asleep. And so I began doing CPR on her until the paramedics arrived. And then they took over and stabilized her at the scene then. So that was the event that happened.
CPR saved her life.
CPR saved her life.
Not the first time you've heard that, I imagine, Serena.
No, we hear it on a daily basis.
Seriously, daily?
Mm-hmm.
So what do we have to do? I mean, I've had a couple of CPR courses. They're not extremely difficult.
No. No, they're not. And we have made a transition over the past few years to recognizing that most people, lay people, you and I in the community that aren't CPR instructors, also need to act fast. And so we have gone from encouraging people to take CPR classes and courses and becoming CPR certified to transitioning to becoming hands-only trained. And so circulating that blood and, you know, doing the two steps, calling 911, and then pressing hard and fast to the center of the chest to the beat of staying alive is what anybody can do to save a life. And simply keeping the oxygen in the blood circulating throughout the body is what is going to ultimately save their life until EMS can arrive.
And you mentioned that fast rhythm, but
yes,
making sure someone's calling 911 is even,
yes,
more important?
Yes. That first step of calling 911, because, you know, let me be honest with you, as many people as I've trained in hands-only CPR, it's exhausting. And so when your adrenaline kicks in, you're going to be able to sustain the exhaustion from that, but still you're going to want to have help as soon as possible. And so that first step of calling 911 is key, electing somebody to call 911. But let's also face that the fact that we're in the age of technology and you can have Siri call 911 for you, or hey, Google can call 911 for you. So we are in a great time to where saving somebody's life is easier than it ever has been.
And do you remember your adrenaline level at that time when you're saving your daughter's life?
It's funny when you talk to people who deal with people like me, they'll say when it's a parent that either they're usually so hysterical that they almost have to be restrained, or they're profoundly calm in a weird way. And I was very, very calm. weirdly calm. When the paramedics came in, I actually knew one of them. He was a friend of ours. And I remember trying to initiate a conversation with him, like, how are you doing? How's your wife doing? You know, and he said, you know, give me the baby. And had to tell me, you know, why don't you go put on something comfortable and call your husband, have him, you know, meet us at Northwest. And I was like, okay. I just was really, really calm until the point at the hospital. They told me they were going to air flight her. And then that's when it kind of clicked with me that I was sort of fooling myself. And I had worked in hospitals before and you know, totally understood what that meant. And that's when I kind of went from super calm to hysterical. And the hysteria lasted pretty much the rest of the day. So the adrenaline can do weird things. You know, it can either make you uncontrollable or it can make you, I was almost apathetic, I think. Hmm.
You mentioned that you called the doctor's office first because you didn't think it was quite an emergency. Is that something that can happen? You see someone collapse and you just don't think it's time?
I think within a parent situation, absolutely. And that's what, when you call any pediatrician's office, the very first thing that they have on their message is, if this is a medical emergency, please hang up and call 911. Because as a parent, you experience things, like Anna is saying, you experience things that a normal person removed from that emotional relationship is going to experience. So if we were at a convenience store, or if you were at a high school, or and you didn't have an emotional connection with the person, it would be very easy for you to act fast, to identify that the situation has gone bad very quickly, and that the first thing that you need to do is call 911. So that is easier if you're not connected. But the harsh reality is that 80% of people who will administer CPR will do it on a family member or a loved one. And so that's going to be your friends and your family. And so that's why we need to equip people with more training in hands-only CPR, to where they have it so ingrained in their mind that step one is call 911, step two is push hard and fast in the center of the chest to the beat of staying alive. So we have, with the Heart Association, we have done some spoofs, some really fun YouTube things to really engage people in a different mindset, to where they are thinking about it, whether it's a bad situation or it's just something that they're discussing in the office, in the workspace. So we do go into corporations a lot to talk to them and their employees about what they should do, because it does. Ultimately, it's going to impact somebody that you love, and you want to make sure that you don't have that same reaction with your adrenaline, that your first reaction is to call 911.
Well, and I think at that time, also, it would have been 2004. We certainly had 911, but the push for 911 was very different than it is now. I feel like I'm defending myself.
No.
But back then, too, you could call the doctor's office and get your doctor on the phone.
Right.
Whereas now you go through a call center, mm-hmm. right? So it was a little bit different than what we deal with now.
Yeah. Well, and I think as the American Heart Association, we have heard so many stories like Anna's that we have changed our mindset on how we're communicating with people. You know, like I said, we've transitioned from going from you had to be CPR certified to have that confidence, to hands-only CPR is going to save a life. And, you know, 4 years ago, the American Heart Association was key in passing some legislation that all high school seniors in the state of Arkansas now have to be hands-only trained. And so prior to graduation, they have to be trained in this life-saving skill. That's 32,000 students across the state of Arkansas that now know a life-saving skill should something happen, like I said, at a convenience store mm-hmm. or, you know, at the library or wherever you're at, their first reaction will be those two steps.
I can't imagine anyone has ever said to you that, well, I'll learn it someday and it's not important, and you tell them the story if you do, and they don't change their mind, right?
Well, I like when she was talking, I like the fact that they've lessened up on the requirements for what you have to do, because that's one of the things that I learned early on, was that when I did CPR on my daughter that day, I wasn't thinking about how deep my compressions were or how many I was doing. And I probably, even being an instructor, didn't really quite give any of the procedures I knew time to work before I started second-guessing myself.
Right.
Like, did she really choke? Do I need to be doing the Heimlich instead of CPR? And that's back when we did the abdominal thrusts, remember, for unconscious.
Right.
So things were even more complicated back then. And so one of the messages that I've always given now after all of these years is what you just said, doing something is always better than doing nothing. And not to worry about, yes, I want you to know the numbers and the depth of compressions and all of that, but in real life, I really just want you to know how to do a good compression. And so I've taught that way for years, so I'm glad to know that I'm doing it legally now. But that to me is just, and I tell my story in every class I teach. So I teach at Bentonville High School, and I certify about 250 kids a year. And so they get certified in Heart Saver. And, you know, kids get kind of silly when they play with mannequins and things like that. Right. And some of the things that we have to talk about, they get a little silly. And I always get through all of that and let them work through that. And then I sit them down and I tell them, you know, my story. And right now it's really effective because my daughter is their peer right now. She's that age. And so most of them know her. And they do tend to sober up a little bit and understand that what they're doing is really important.
You know, sometimes people are, well, wait, am I doing it too many times? Are the compressions too fast, too slow? In the heat of the moment, does that ultimately matter?
Doing something is better than nothing. We have a group of 10th graders that we have the pleasure of working with every year. They're called the Sweethearts, and they go through an advocacy and wellness program. They're so fun to work with, but every year we kick off our program by teaching them hands-only CPR, and it's humbling to be able to talk to a 15, 16-year-old about you can't do anything to make the situation worse. You can only make it better. And so to empower them in that way, or to empower anybody in that way, is something that will ultimately save a life. So pressing hard and fast in the center of the chest. Obviously, there are, like, you want to make sure that you're getting a 2-inch compression. There are pointers that when we do hands-only training that we make sure that we point out, but doing something is better than nothing.
Point out.
So, like, you want to make sure that your palm is the part of your hand that is in the center of the chest, making sure that it's not like your fingertips that's in the center of the chest, just some pointers along the way. You want to make sure that you're getting a 2-inch compression. And why that is so key is because when you are pressing, that making that 2-inch compression, you're actually, you know, the heart is a muscle. And so you, if it has stopped, you are contracting it for the body. And when you release off of that 2-inch compression, granted, you don't want to come all the way off the chest, like you're not trying to make sure that you're doing a push-up on them or anything, but when you release from that 2-inch compression, you're allowing that heart to expand and fill with blood. So the next compression that you make, you're squeezing that muscle and continuing that circulation that the heart would normally do on its own.
If it's a younger person, do you have to worry about how hard you're pressing?
No, not necessarily. Obviously, an infant is different, but you will be able to respond to what their body is doing. And you know, just by watching, having that hands-only training, and by watching the person that you're administering CPR on, you'll be able to sense what a good compression is for their body type. Obviously, a larger individual, you're going to have to press harder. A child, you're going to press a little bit lighter.
And I've had students come back and say, so glad I took that class with you, because over Christmas my grandmother collapsed at, you know, the family dinner, and I knew what to do.
Wow.
Nobody else knew what to do, but I knew what to do.
It's amazing to me that age group and how just a little bit of training, they feel more empowered than somebody that's double their age.
Oh, absolutely.
And so,
and they're good at it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so good, and they're so responsive to it. And to see, you know, one sweetheart that can't get the compression down. Granted, when we go and train, we have what are called Annies, and they help you learn the compressions. They click, so you know you're getting that 2-inch compression, and we always warn them, it's not going to click in real life. Don't be listening
for that.
For that sound. You're going to still do it right. Do off of muscle memory. And it's encouraging to see one sweetheart who maybe can't get Annie to click, to have another sweetheart that's like, hey, let me show you what worked best for me. And so they rally around each other, but they are the first to respond should something go wrong.
Serena Munns is the executive director of the American Heart Association in Northwest Arkansas, and Anna Mizell is a CPR instructor, teacher at Bentonville High School, and a parent who saved her daughter's life using CPR. They talked with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums last week. You can learn more about CPR at heart.org.
KUAF's Summer Night Swing, a live fundraising event, is Friday, June 22nd from 7 to 10 p.m. Local musicians will perform, including Claudia Burson, Ed Nicholson, Ben Harris, Ezra Eidlett, and Keith Grimwood of Trout Fishing in America, and more. It's a celebration of local music featuring the two longest-running programs on 91.3, Shades of Jazz and The Pick and Post. Support local music programs on your public radio station during the KUAF Summer Night Swing. Live and on the air, Friday, June 22nd from 7 to 10 p.m. on 91.3.
It is Monday, June 18th, 2018, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now inside Studio 123 is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Do you think they started looking for Kyle's body yet?
He's supposed to be back from vacation tomorrow.
I suspect there are people going, oh my God, am I stuck with them forever? I have the two crazy women. Where's Kyle?
Kyle's on vacation. He'll be back.
He'll be back. And the crazy women get to talk about theater, so it's all good.
Okay, what theater?
New theater company called the Smokehouse Players. They've only done one show before.
Okay, because I feel bad that I've not heard of them now.
Ah, well, they're performing at the Ozark Mountain Smokehouse west of Fayetteville.
Hence the name.
They've been given access to this great performance space that used to be a walk-in cooler.
Oh, fun.
They call it the Chiller. And this is their second show. They're doing the Gin Game.
I don't know this one.
I didn't really either. Mm-hmm. I had to look. They have to do small shows because it's a small space.
Oh, absolutely.
And they can't really do a set. They can't really do anything. They're not going to do Phantom of the Opera there.
Right.
This is a two-person show that won a Pulitzer in 1986. Don't tell me how old you were then either. It's a lady who's been forced to move into a retirement home. She's all alone, and she meets a guy there who invites her to play the card game Gin with him. And you think it's going to be this sweet story where they've really found each other, but not so much because they both have a ton of baggage that pops up from playing Gin. Mm. And it's funny and it's sad and it's directed by Warren Rosenauer. So you know it's going to be wonderful.
From Fayetteville High School.
And Janelle Grace Lipscomb is playing the woman, also a teacher, who, oddly enough, was in the show playing this part 30 years ago.
Oh, that's fun.
And now, you know, so she was 30-something at the time, and now she's 60-something, revisiting this role of a 71-year-old woman. She says it's a very different perspective. Tim Gilster is playing the male lead, and he's one of the founders of the company. He and his wife, Terry Vaughn, came back to Northwest Arkansas after a career in New York. And their idea is to do interesting shows that you might not see anywhere else. I think the next one is going to be Talking With, which if you're old guard university theater, you remember that show. And then they've got Valentine's and Killer Chili on their plan for next year. It's a Kent Brown show. Remember when Kent was chairman of the drama department at the UA for ages. And the last show that I produced for Ozark Stageworks. So it'll be interesting to see that show again. Showtimes for the Gin Game are 7:30 Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Ozark Mountain Smokehouse. It's free, but they ask for donations, and the first night donations on Thursday go to Magdalene Serenity House.
Oh, wonderful.
And you can find out more by emailing Terry Tim, T-E-R-R-Y-T-I-M, at cox.net. The production does have adult language, which they tell me is a strong PG-13.
Okay. So you've been warned.
Also this week, all sorts of stuff going on everywhere. Artisphere, Beethoven Masterworks at the Walton Arts Center on Tuesday evening. Sandwiched in on Wednesday at the Shiloh Museum at noon. I didn't get to do this interview, and I got to get over there. It's called the Harmonial Vegetarian Society, The Real Story. And apparently this group existed around here, and there's very little evidence. Hmm. But somebody's going to talk about what there is. Let's see. What else do we have? That sound you hear is me turning the page. Oh, Ergene Conon is going to talk about reviving the compositions of Florence Price on Wednesday at 6 at the Fayetteville Public Library.
So free.
And then Artisphere continues. Opera in the Ozarks starts on Friday.
Oh, we are at that time of the summer. Yes, wow.
They're doing, this year's rotation is Die Fledermaus, The Barber of Seville, and an American opera called The Ballad of Baby Doe, which I don't know much about. But the three shows are in repertory through the 20th of July. So we can keep you busy clear up until the end of summer. I'll keep coming back.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs. It's too bad the double album Listen to What I'm Made Of, songs by and for Shannon Yarbrough, ever had to be made. Shannon Max Yarbrough was a Little Rock musician not yet 25 years old when he died on May 5, 2000, after an accident on Arkansas Highway 10 in western Pulaski County. Someone had apparently moved road machinery to the middle of the dark highway. Yarbrough smashed into the equipment and was instantly killed. The culprit was never found. Yarbrough touched many lives in Arkansas, New York, and beyond through his music. So much so, in 2001, a 2-CD tribute set called Listen to What I'm Made Of was released. Disc 1 has songs from Yarbrough's brief catalog. Some are demos, and most stem from his time in the Arkansas bands Big Cats and Rusty James, heard here. The set was issued by the File 13 label. Located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and now Chicago, Illinois, File 13 was actually launched in Little Rock in the early 1990s. Little Rock's Graham Cobb was in Rusty James with Yarbrough and helped organize the tribute CD project.
Shannon just was the dude everybody wanted in their band. He was the best guitarist. He was the guy willing to work the hardest. And he never really said that. You just knew, once you knew him, you knew that.
In 1997, Shannon Yarbrough moved to New York City and eventually hooked up with several other displaced Arkansas musicians. He honed his musical skills and took an interest in recording others. In the summer of 1999, Yarbrough returned to Little Rock and began working in earnest, recording, performing, and practicing. Less than a year later, he was dead. Disc 2 of Listen to What I'm Made Of, songs by and for Shannon Yarbrough, feature bands paying tribute to Shannon Yarbrough in song. Showing testament to Yarbrough's broad influence during his short life, 19 bands crowd the second disc, many little known in Little Rock, like Sean Na Na, heard here. And some of the most stalwart artists of the greater Little Rock scene also appear in the collection, like Ho Hum, Lucero, Mulehead, Sufi Nun Squad, Nessie, and Magic Crop Dusters.
Hide.
Owing its very existence to tragedy, the Listen to What I'm Made Of CD set offers still more tragedy in its display of lost young promise on disc one. While both the tribute disc and the disc of Yarborough's music have excellent moments, it's a shame listeners had to hear it this way.
It is, but the way we all look at it is that Shannon Yarborough will never go bad in our minds. Shannon Yarborough will never lose faith in music, will never get jaded, ever. And he stands as what to me, you know, is he stands as the embodiment of the Little Rock music ideology, which is to do it because you love to do it. I mean, we're in Little Rock, Arkansas. You can't go and knock on Capitol Records doors. You're going to do music in Little Rock because you have to.
From the double album, Listen to What I'm Made Of, songs by and for Shannon Yarborough, here in its entirety is Little Rock's Shannon Yarborough with Colin Brooks and Unknown Brooklyn. Little Rock native Shannon Yarborough with Unknown Brooklyn from the tribute double disc set Listen to What I'm Made Of. Songs by and for Shannon Yarborough on File 13 Records, released in 2001. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. 91.3 FM KUAF is supported by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering a variety of living options from apartments to village homes, plus a daily calendar of activities and events. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org.
One more quick note before we end this edition of the program. The number 5 Arkansas baseball team opened its 2018 College World Series with an 11-5 victory over Texas yesterday in Omaha. With the help of an 8-run sixth inning, the Razorbacks' 11 runs were a program high for a College World Series game. Luke Bonfield hit Arkansas's 95th home run of the year, while Jared Gates and Heston Kerstad each had 3 hits in the game. With the win, Arkansas improves to 45-19 overall and advances in the winner's bracket to face Texas Tech. The game can be seen tomorrow evening at 6 on ESPN. This is 91.3 FM KUAF in Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Huntsville, a listener-supported service of the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large with Kyle Kellums. Until then, remember, you can keep up with us on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter. You can also send us an email at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com, and you can catch up on old episodes of the show at ozarksatlarge.com. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you have a fantastic Monday.